I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. We're back with another episode of The Stacks, and I'm your host, Tracy Thomas. Our guest today is Nicole Thurman, who is an actor and comedian best known for her work on The Opposition with Jordan Klepper. If you love The Stacks and want to stay connected, make sure you're following us on social media, at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. You can find links to all of our accounts in the show notes, along with links to everything we talk about today. If you're planning on shopping on Amazon, click the links in our show notes before you shop, and the Stacks will earn a small commission, and you'll get to know that your purchase helped an independent podcast. I want to say thank you to all of you for listening to the podcast. I also want to say a special thank you to the Stacks Pack, aka our patrons. These people put their money where their mouth is and contribute monthly to making the show a reality. They also earn perks and inside access for their generosity. So if you're interested in joining our virtual book club, among many other things, plus knowing that you're helping this show to exist in the world, go to patreon.com/thestacks. And I just wanted to give a special shout out to our newest member of the Stacks Pack, Lee Walters. If a monthly contribution isn't your thing, consider one-time contributions by going to paypal.me/thestackspod. I know I ask you all this every week, and it's only because it's super important, but if you haven't yet, please take a moment to rate and review the show. I cannot tell you how much it helps. Our most recent review comes from Lizzie Lou 1983, and they say, I learned about the Stacks when Tawny of Yo Is This Racist was on, and I am hooked. I love the format of getting to know the reviewer first before diving into the book, so you can assess how their feelings on the book may differ from your own. My TBR pile is growing exponentially, and I love your focus on women authors, especially women of color. Thank you so much, Lizzie, for listening to the show and for writing that review. Okay, listeners, it's your turn. Write your review. All right, let's go. It's time to meet actress and comedian Nicole Thurman. All right, y'all, I am here today with Nicole Thurman, who is an actress and comedian. Nicole is known for being a citizen journalist on The Opposition with Jordan Klepper, and she's on the brand new Hulu show Shrill that just came out earlier this week. Nicole, welcome to The Stacks.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so excited that you're here. So basically, that's like your little bio, like resume. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, what you also like to do with your time that's not work, like anything.
Okay. First of all, I'm only on one episode of Shrill. So episode 2, catch me in that one.
Okay. Very important. Sure
that's clear. But yeah, I'm originally from Kansas City. I just grew up there and lived there for my life until I was out of school. And then I moved to Chicago, started doing theater, started doing comedy there. Then I was like, I want to move on and do bigger things because I was working at the Second City as a performer. And I was like, I'm ready to like, I don't know, branch out and do different things. So I moved out here in 2015 And then 2017, I got the show that on Comedy Central, The Opposition. And so then I moved to New York last year, did the show for a year. Yeah. Like, okay. Was gone for a year working on that. It was very intense. And then the show got canceled, which was a little bit of a bummer. So then I just moved back here like a few months ago. So I'm kind of excited to be in LA. And as far as like what I like to do outside of acting, it's probably a lot of things at this point because acting is stressful. No, it's not. I'm just kidding. But lately I've been working out. It's kind of lame, but it's like I quit drinking like 10 months ago now.
Okay.
I just hit 10 months. And so I was like, I'm just going to like keep not drinking and just get like fit and just like live my life and see what that's like, because I see
definitely
people doing it.
Don't think that that's lame. As someone who is a fitness professional, exactly. I think that's awesome, and thank you for keeping my industry alive.
Yes, and thank you for keeping me alive, I guess, and like looking good.
What kind of workouts are you into?
Well, I used to be like crazy into spin, okay. And then lately I've been kind of like, my new obsession is HIIT classes. You ever take HIIT classes?
High intensity interval training.
Yeah. I love those. I just like love, because it's like I get really bored. Like I rarely will go to a gym and just like, you know, run on a treadmill or mm-hmm. like lift or whatever. So I'll go to a HIIT class. And so I go there and it's just fun. And the people there are really nice. And like, we're like lifting weights and lifting kettlebells and then like, you know, going to BOSU ball and jumping around on that. And like, honestly, that's like become a really fun thing for me to do in my spare time. I feel like it's like in LA when you're living here, you have to find ways to like,
Pass the time.
If you're an actor, because it's like, if you just sit at home and you're like looking at your email all day and stressing about like, why am I not getting 4 million auditions, then you're going to be like really
miserable.
Stressed out. So yeah, I love doing that. I like hiking. I like just being outside. I love seeing music, like going to like see live music. I play music too. I play guitar and violin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And violin.
And violin.
Whoa.
Like not super well, but like I play. Yeah.
No, Do you play violin still?
Yeah.
Because I feel like violin's like one of those things that you play as a kid.
Yeah.
And then you become an adult and you're like, I have a violin, but I haven't opened it in 3 years.
Yeah. I feel like that is what a lot of people will say when you say like you play the violin. And it's funny because I actually have like this crusty violin that I've had since fourth grade. And so I still like play this crusty old violin. But yeah, I will play it every now and then. Like I live in a building with very thin walls, so I try to be polite to my neighbors.
Okay.
But I will definitely, like now I think also I used to play like more like, I used to try, you know, classical and like heart more intense songs, but now I'll just play like pop songs. Like if I like really like a song and it has like strings in the background, I'll just like learn the strings and sing along. And I don't know, it's like really, it's just a fun, it's such a nice little habit to have.
What's the pop song that you're into playing?
I really love Saint Vincent. This is a very, I mean, this is not poppy at all. She's kind of like, she's like indie rock.
She's the
like
gal
that.
Who was with Dua Lipa at the Grammys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, whenever I see the name Dua Lipa, I just think two lips, and I don't understand the name. Is that a real name, or is it like a stage name?
I know nothing.
Okay,
about
I'm always
her.
Like, what is this name? What does it mean? I don't know.
And she has a song with Miguel, and that's all I know.
Yeah, I need to like, when I watched the Grammys, I was like, where am I? Like, I must be old all of a sudden.
That
I'm like, who are these
that
people?
Performance was so weird. Also, I was like, are they a Kardashian? Is that a, like, is there a Kardashian performing?
Yeah.
I didn't know that that's what they both looked like.
I didn't see the performance, but I just saw like GIFs, however you say it.
I'm team GIF.
You are, me too. Okay, good. So I saw GIFs of the performance, like Saint Vincent posted a couple on Instagram, and I was like, what is happening?
What is this?
Did they make out? Like, are we, like, I don't know what's happening. They did look like they were very close.
They looked very similar.
But anyway, I play, so long story short, I'll play like Saint Vincent song. She has this beautiful song called Slow Disco.
I don't even know who she is besides so that she good. Was with Dua Lipa, so I'm going to have to look into that.
She's really good. She's like a guitar genius. Like, she's I don't think she's like a prodigy, but she's just like really, really good at guitar.
Does she sing?
She does. Yeah. Okay. She sings and plays guitar at the same time. And she's just like fantastic. Like, she's just, I don't know, she's kind of like artsy. And she like, her new album had like all these like women like in the walls, like coming out with just their legs coming out and dancing and stuff. And I was just like, she's just like, so like, you feel like, yes, this like, woman is killing it. Yeah.
Okay. I love that.
I really love her. So I'll play a lot of her music. But yeah, that's like, yeah, that's like,
it's
like
so
to
cool
do.
That you play the violin.
Yeah.
I feel like that's like, there's not a lot of adults.
I know.
Who aren't musicians by trade that are like still playing the violin, I feel.
It is like that. I feel like, because I feel like a lot of playing music for people, from what I've just heard and what people say, it seems to be it's just like something to do when you're a kid. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like that's what soccer was. And like right. I was like good at soccer, but then I was like, I don't care about soccer. Like, right. I'm not playing soccer anymore. So I stopped playing soccer. And then – but the violin I wanted to play since I was like tiny. Like I always wanted to play the violin. Gosh. I just loved it. I don't know why, but it was like a stringed instrument and just like listening to orchestras and all of that classical music I just loved. And so I started in fourth grade, but I've always – I mean it's not something that I ever dropped. It was something that I always kept with. Plus it's just like – you know, you can just sit at home and like play songs and sing. And like, it's that kind of like getting, you have to find ways to get your creativity out. I feel right. like also like, cause I used to do a lot more shows, like a lot more theater and you have that immediate gratification of the audience being there and you're right. like on stage. You're like, this is, you know, what I need. This
right.
needs me.
Right.
But then, I don't know, just finding ways to get your creativity out when you're in a place like LA where it might be like months between jobs.
Right. Totally.
You know, so it's like, I like to get my physical energy out now with my working out. And then I like to get my creative energy out with like playing music or like making a dopey video on Instagram or something.
I love it. That's how this podcast kind of came to be, is that I was a performer and then I moved to LA and I wasn't performing anymore. And I teach thin. Yeah. And then I was like having really bad anxiety. Mm. Like I was feeling like, I don't know, like I'm worried about everything. Like I'm worried about crossing the street. I'm worried about driving to the Grove. Like, mm-hmm. like I'm going to die, or like, I don't know, like weird anxiety.
Yeah.
And I talked to a friend of mine who's actually like not professionally, but she's a therapist and she deals with anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I was like telling her, I was like, I'm so anxious. Like, I don't know. She was like, well, are you like a creative person? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, well, why, like, are you doing anything creative? I was like, not really. Mm-hmm. And then I like started kind of thinking about other things and then books and whatever, it all came together. But ever since I started doing the podcast, I haven't had that same kind of anxiety.
Yeah.
I still am an anxious flyer. I'm still anxious, like, because that's who I am.
Right.
But like that like weird anxiety of like, oh my God, I'm going to burn the house down with dinner. Like,
right.
And I'm like, I'm in the kitchen. Like, it's not like I'm leaving, you know, like it was like weird stuff. But part of this podcast was like therapy for me to be like, I need to be getting my thoughts out like in the world because I'm not acting or dancing anymore. So I feel that.
Yeah, it's so important because I do think it's just like your brain can just keep going and going and going and going. I'm the same way where I'm like such a worrier.
Yeah.
And then also if you're trying to pursue your art and it's not going exactly how you want in the moment, it's like you want to find a way to distract yourself from freaking out about that.
Yeah.
Because like if I'm freaking out about my job, which I absolutely cannot control because it's such a strange job,
right,
then I'm going to make it worse. Like I'm going to go to an audition and I'm going to be like a desperate little fool being right. like, please give me this job. Right. I need this job. And so it's just like the best way to like get rid of that is to just like get it out with something else.
Like things that are just for you or like things that excite you.
Yeah.
How did you get into acting and comedy?
Let me think about that. So it's always so weird because it's like I was like super shy when I was younger. And so I still don't know what made me do it, but my freshman year of high school, I signed up for a drama class. Okay. And it's so strange because it's like, I was shy, but right. I wanted to do that for some reason. Like, that's like a very odd thing to me. I still can't remember exactly why I did it. But anyway, so I started taking like drama classes and we kind of, you know, it was like a good theater high school.
Okay.
We learned about like stagecraft and we learned about, you know, acting. And then we had like our senior year, we were in like a little comedy troupe where we like wore like jumpsuits and I don't even like, oh, just did comedy. Like what is probably awful, but it was so fun. You had to audition to get in. And so I was like, I'm in ART, which was advanced repertory theater. And ooh. I felt very cool about it. So anyway, I remember when I was like graduating high school, I realized like I really love this. Like I have loved being in these shows. I've loved doing this. This is my thing. And then I remember crying to my drama teacher. Very dramatic. I was like crying to her because I was like, I want to do this for a living, but I don't think I can major in theater in school. Like that's crazy. Who does that? Like that's nuts. And so she was just like, you have to do what you want to do. And like you have to pursue. If you can't think of anything else you want to do, you got to just
do it.
You got to do it.
Is that what you majored in, theater?
And so I majored in theater in college.
Where'd you go to school?
University of Kansas. Nothing fancy.
Okay.
But it was fun. And I studied theater and did like movement classes and like, you know, dialect classes and all that stuff. And then when I graduated, well, I had done an internship in Chicago at Steppenwolf Theater.
Mm.
And so when I graduated from college, I moved to Chicago. And I was like, I love this theater community. It just seems like really I don't know, like it's like it's a good community.
Yeah.
Which and you don't really see, I think, in New York or LA. You don't see that community.
It's different. It's not, yeah. It's bigger. The theater is bigger in New York. So yeah. It's because it's bigger, there's more like factions or like it's more divided. You could be working in the theater for 20 years and never meet someone. Whereas in Chicago, I think because it's smaller, those working actors know each other and work together and think of each other. And I think it's kind of like more communal.
Yeah. And you kind of like come up together. It seems like in a way, like a lot of people will start doing like storefront theater, which is also a very Chicago thing, I think. Mm-hmm. Like you're doing theater for free in like a storefront, literally.
Right.
And then like, you know, you move up and you're doing like more regional theater, getting paid for it. So it's like we all kind of like grow up together. So that's how I started there. And I was like, I had always wanted to do like dramatic, I don't know, just like serious stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I also had like had applied to intern at the Second City.
Okay.
And I was like, I didn't end up working there because I didn't end up interning there because I wanted to go with Steppenwolf because it was more serious. Mm. And so then this woman at Second City who runs their outreach and diversity program, her name's Diana. She was like, listen, I know that like you didn't intern here, but if you ever want to take a class here, like feel free. I'll give you a free class if you work for 2 hours for me a week or something. And I was like, okay. And so then she's like, after I took the class, I was like, that was cool. And then she was like, listen, I know comedy is like not your thing, but if you ever want to maybe audition for us, just like give me your headshot and resume. So I was like, I'll audition for anyone.
Right.
So I gave her my
I'm an actor. I'm available.
And I'm thirsty. Like, please don't discount the fact that I will do anything for
I'll
money.
I'll do it. Sure.
So I gave her my headshot and resume and then I auditioned for something and I got it. And I was like, wait, you know, like maybe this is a vibe that's like good for me, like comedy. Like because I had never considered comedy. I was literally like, I want to be doing like, you know, The Crucible or some like dramatic play. Right. So anyway, I started doing shows with them and it just became like so my thing. And it was perfect because it's the type of place where you can do sketch comedy. So it's like acting.
Right.
You can improvise, which I had to learn.
Which is so hard.
Oh my God.
No, thank you.
I really had no training when I started at the Second City. And luckily there are a lot of very, very good improvisers mm-hmm. there. And they're very good at lifting people up and making them look good. And then I can learn on my feet pretty well. I can kind of learn almost by imitation. So then I kind of learned on the fly how to improvise. Whew. But you also can like sing because there's always music in it and I'm a singer. Okay. And then I played instruments in a couple shows. It's kind of one of those things where you can like do
whatever
everything.
You want. Like you can make your own track kind of.
Yeah. And so
I saw something there once. I saw Between Barack and a Hard Place.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like in 2008.
I think that was like right before I got there. Like, well, cause I started working with them in like 2011.
Okay. Yeah.
They're great. I mean, it was a great opportunity. It changed my life too, because I feel like Second City has such a reputation.
Yeah.
That when you're doing the shows there, managers, you know, SNL, you know, MTV, all these people are coming to the show and they're watching you perform. And so it's a different level of performing. Honestly, a level that it makes it more like you can fight in the business. Like it's a business. It makes you more like, okay, now I have a manager. Now I have an agent.
It gives you like street cred too. Yeah. It's like, oh, you can improvise. Like you're funny. Yeah. You can handle it live. Like,
yeah.
Cause comedy live is not like straight theater live in the sense that like if jokes don't land or like things don't work, you feel really naked.
It's immediate.
Yeah.
It's
like whereas like in serious theater, it's like pretty quiet the whole time. Like, so like maybe you didn't make someone cry. Like maybe you're having an off day, but you don't get that immediate feedback.
Absolutely.
Like you do, especially at a place like the Second City where it's like kind of raucous in there. And like
people are drinking.
And people want to be laughing.
Yeah.
So like it's not like going to see a comedy play. You know, it's like a different vibe.
It's not
There's
structured.
An expectation from the audience that you all are going to deliver. So I feel like that makes you kind of like tough as a performer.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's loose. People are freaking drunk. Yeah. You know what I mean? So you're like getting people that are sometimes heckling because they want to challenge you to see like how quick on your feet you are, or like they want to challenge you because they're like, she said something vulgar. I can say something vulgar too, but it's like, they're not funny. Like, so they shouldn't say it. But yeah, it was like, it's definitely like a big challenge. And I remember when I first started, like if the audience wasn't like super into it, I'd be like, why is everybody so upset with the audience? Like, who cares if they laugh or they don't? And now I'm like, well, because you know you're doing the job when they're like,
when they're laughing
and clapping and laughing. And you know you're not doing the job when they're just sitting there like, what is this girl doing?
Right. How did you get to the opposition?
So that was like, I feel like that comedy track, I got a manager, I got an agent. And then I came here to do a showcase, CBS showcase, like silly thing. And then I was living in LA and I met, excuse me, my agent at the showcase. He's still my agent today and I like him very much. He's a very nice person. And so I was just auditioning, just like regular auditioning in LA. And then it was like the self-tape that came through and it was this, it's kind of a funny story. Really, because it was like I was so over it. I was just like,
wait,
so
for people who don't know, a self-tape is when you film yourself for an audition and send it in. So you don't actually go into the room with like a casting director. You just basically make a YouTube video of yourself and like post it online for them and like get, or you email it to them.
Right.
So you're not like you don't have any feedback right away.
No. And like truly like because you start to get cynical and like tired, you're like, nobody's watching this. Like, I don't even know why I'm making this tape. And like, you get really frustrated. And so I was at a point where because I had auditioned like in the past for The Daily Show, which is the same concept. Like you have to write something and it's a lot of work. Those shows, to audition for those shows, it's a lot of work. You have to write a piece, perform that piece, and then also do a piece that they wrote, which is very chunky, very like, you know, a lot of political dialogue and just like not easy. And so I was like, oh God, another one of these like political satire shows. Like, do I have to, you know, it's so much work. And like, I just like, I'm like, I did like 3 or 4 auditions for The Daily Show. What's going to be different about this? And when you send a self tape in, you never know if people are watching it or if they're just like, we're throwing this in the trash because she was awful. Right. You know, you never know. So I ended up doing it because I'm pretty sure I was convinced because one of my friends got a job writing on the show. And so I think it made me like, oh, you know, I'm gonna know somebody that's working on it. It'd be kind of cool to work with her. Like that's my close friend.
Sure.
And so I made a tape. I like wrote out a piece and taped it. And it was like very quickly that they responded very quickly. Like it was maybe like 2 days later, my agent called me and he was like, what are you doing next week? And I was like, I don't know. What do you mean? And he's like, you're going to New York because you're going to test for the show. And so testing for the show is like the next level of audition where you go in front of producers and and they just like, they're looking at you like, are we going to hire this person? And usually there's like probably a handful of people that are there with you that are also testing. And so it's like nerve wracking and exciting, very exciting. I mean, getting flown anywhere for free is totally my thing.
Amazing.
I'm always like, you mean I get a free flight on a plane going to New York City? Yeah, I'm gonna take it. So
I'm available.
I am always the thing about me is I am very available. So they flew me out. I tested, and then it was like freaking like Labor Day weekend or Memorial Day weekend or something that made the days extra. And so like I was just like, it was weird because it's like after I auditioned for it, I knew I got it. Like I knew.
Right. You just felt.
Yeah.
Good.
I was like, this is my job. I just feel like this is my job. I had a really good rapport with the host and like people were laughing and I just felt really confident, which normally you can normally tell when you get something, when you don't, but I'd never gotten a job that big. So, I mean, for me to be like, I got this was kind of crazy.
That's awesome.
But it was just like, I felt it. So I went home came back to LA. And then my agent called me and he was like, Jordan, the host of the show, and the producers are going to call you later today. They just want to talk about like, you know, more about the show and like what they're looking for and da 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 da. And I was like, wait, does that mean I'm getting the job? And he's like, I don't know. I think so. He's like so casual. And I was like, okay, cool. So they called me and they immediately told me that I got the job and it was insane. And I told them I loved them. I was like, I don't even know you, but I love you. And they're like, we love you. And it was really great.
And did you enjoy working on the show? Were you writing your own stuff as well? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So every day we had like meetings where we go and like watch like, cause we were pretending to be conservatives on the show.
Right.
So we had to watch like Fox News and Alex Jones and just like the grossest people. Like
he's the actual grossest. He's horrible.
And you know, he has his, now his son does stuff on InfoWars. Oh, it's just awful because he's saying all these like hateful things. He's like 15 and he's a child. And so it's just like, what are we doing? You're like, what are you doing to this
kid?
What
are we doing here?
Yeah. So we'd watch all that in the day and like during the daytime. And then we'd just pitch ideas. Like, and I pitched a lot because, you know, to be honest, it's like as a woman of color in comedy, you gotta get your stuff on the stage. You gotta get your stuff on the TV.
Right.
And the best way to do that is to create your own lane and can tell people this is what I would like to talk about.
Right.
And I did a lot of pitching. So I pitched a lot every day. I would just sit in my office and pitch. And, you know, there was a lot of days we wouldn't be on the show. And then you'd be on the show maybe once a week. And you'd also get to go fly places and do field pieces, which was really
That's
cool.
Fun.
Yeah.
And did you feel like what kind of stuff were you reading or watching besides conservative stuff to like kind of help you come up with ideas?
Well,
besides watching what the conservative side was saying, I'm assuming you must have also been like intaking news from other angles, like to kind of get a better sense of the bigger picture.
Yeah. And
or
I
no?
think, well, yeah, I think so. Well, like I think especially for field pieces, because you want to find something that's like a little bit off the beaten path mm-hmm. and a little bit like just something that's happening. It doesn't have to be a conservative event that we go to.
Right.
It could be anything. And then we just bring the satirical like angle to
right,
it.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, I would look a lot, especially because also sometimes you just want to see a regular news story. You don't want to like read these horrible, like Fox News angles on things.
Right.
So it's like, you just want to see regular things. So we would actually go through a lot of like local papers and like, I would even go through like the Atlantic, Huffington Post, some things that were like a little bit lighter,
mm-hmm.
but like, yeah, you'd go to like I would randomly like Google like, you know, Phoenix newspaper or something like
okay.
that. So then it's like, you're reading like what's going on in that area.
Right.
And then you're finding little events like Alex Jones kind of got us on this track. But one of my favorite field pieces that I got to do was talking to drag queens who did this thing called Drag Queen Story Hour.
Okay.
I didn't even mean to make it book themed, but that was my favorite one.
There you go.
It's about these. It's like drag queens. It's a thing that happens all over the country where drag queens are reading books to kids and to teach them about like inclusivity and just like being open to other people and loving everyone. And it's just like a beautiful thing.
Right.
But of course, you know, Alex Jones
right.
calling them demons and like
right.
he's saying that obviously like they're infecting these children and da 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 da.
Right. Just like nice stuff.
Yeah. Just like nice stuff is he's finding a way to like
yeah.
hate on it. It's like what to live in that body. My God. It's just probably like cholesterol and stress.
He's
and
truly just
heartburn.
Horrible. When you go and do the field pieces, I've always wondered this. I don't know if this is – you can even answer this. I don't know if it's a secret. But because you're playing like conservative caricatures, when you're interviewing like the drag queens or whoever it is, do you have a thing before where you're like, hi, I'm Nicole. I'm a normal human. I'm going to be interviewing you like this. Mm. Or do you just go in character and like interview and talk to them?
Yeah, I would have to introduce myself because I don't know. I mean, I feel like we kind of are very similar about being worriers, being
yeah.
anxious.
Yeah.
I would like be so nervous because truly, I mean, even in the audition, like field pieces were not even in my mind as something I
okay.
would have to do.
Okay.
So when I found out I had to do them, I was like,
right.
oh my God. So yeah, I'd have to be like, hey, like, I just want you to know, like, I'm going to be saying some crazy stuff and like, I don't mean any of it. Like, this is just a character and like, but I mean, it still would be really hard because people would still get upset. People
okay.
would still like look at me like they didn't like me when the interview was over. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I swear I love what you're doing and that's why we're featuring it. It's not like my character is a character,
right.
but they would, you know, it was hard. Like we went to Mississippi and talked to a woman who was running the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. There's only one
mm-hmm.
because of all the laws
yeah.
and just yeah. psycho people. So anyway, we were talking to her and I was Laura, who was the other female correspondent on the show, we were doing it together and we're like interviewing her and it was the two of us, like two on one, like two conservative idiot characters versus one very lovely woman who's just trying to keep it together, you
right.
know? And she started crying and I felt awful because I was like, this is not serious, but it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter.
Right, because she probably hears all that stuff for real all the time.
Yeah.
And so that's got to be really hard
yeah.
on her.
So I think it was tough. That was a very tough thing to do. And I tried to just be as kind to them as possible when I could and,
mm-hmm.
you know, reiterate over and over again, like, this is not me. This is
I'm
not
acting.
Me. I promise I'm a nice person. Like, I promise I love what you're doing. So, yeah.
That's hard.
It was hard.
It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated. And AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in store. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit to reading, since allegedly this is a podcast about books, which I basically say every week. I get off these on these like tangents and I'm like, oh, by the way, we're going to talk about books, people. Just relax. How does reading fit into your life as an actor, performer?
Well, I think it's obviously super important. I feel like I've gotten, you know, more on the like script reading track, but it's one of those things too, like you don't, a lot of times we have these auditions where we only get like 4 pages or something and we don't realize that like we don't know the context of what's going on. So I think it's really important to like read the whole script. I used to not do that, and now I try to almost every audition I have, because it's like I want to see what's going on. I want to see who these people are, and the only way to do that is to see the whole thing. And I feel like because of traveling more last year, actually Comedy Central got me a Kindle, and that's why I have a Kindle. And it was very nice of them. And just getting that Kindle and like the travel aspect of that job, it was a way to kind of like decompress and also a way to like, I don't know, just like get, I felt like I had not been a good reader for a long time. And so I think like getting back into reading more, it felt really good. And it felt like a good way to like decompress when I was traveling. So.
And so do you mostly read on your Kindle?
Yeah. I feel like, yeah, I definitely do. I feel like there's something about the Kindle that like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm like, I feel like the internet has definitely made me stupid, more stupid. Sure. I feel like it's made everybody more stupid, but it's like, there's something about, it's like, which is like easier. I feel like I just like go through a book and, you know, if I read like a, just a quick, easy book, then I'm just like immediately like, okay, Amazon, what do you got for the next book? And then you just pick the next book. And it's kind of just like an easy way for me to read.
Right.
it's kind of like, honestly, it sounds so silly, but it's like it's light in your hands. So you don't get like that tired. You're just like looking at this and it's kind of like lit up. And so it keeps you like staring at it just like a phone would.
Right.
Which is silly, but it's like, I get why it works. I totally get why it works. So yeah, I do mostly read on Kindle.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, let's dive in. What are two books you love and one book you hate?
Okay. This book called She's Come Undone by Wally Lamb. Mm-hmm. Did you read that book?
I know the book. I've never read it. I know it. My mom loved it.
Oh, it's so good. I read it so long ago that I feel silly even bringing it up. But I feel funny. It's funny too because I feel like with books, I typically remember the feeling.
Totally.
It's like visceral. Like mm-hmm. I remember reading this book and it was just so epic. It like takes you through this journey of this like young girl's life into adulthood. And she has all these issues and like she's kind of trying to deal with that. I just loved it. I just remember it being like, it was really thick. It was really good. It was back when I was reading like hard, you know, solid books. But yeah, I loved it.
That's so interesting that you say that because I have had this, I've always felt that way, that I might read a book and love it and then not really remember anything that happens in the book, but like know that I loved the book for whatever reason, like that it resonated with me. Like I think of The Kite Runner. I don't know if you ever read that book. Yeah. I loved The Kite Runner. I cannot tell you anything that happens in The Kite Runner. Right. I actually don't even know what, but I know that there were like kites in it.
Yeah.
And like, but like, I don't remember that. But I know that I loved the book and I know that when I read it, it meant something to me.
Yeah.
And that's like, I feel like that a lot with books. Like I read a lot and so I forget things, but I remember what the book felt like.
Yeah.
Or that it made me feel something, even if I forget all the plot points, couldn't tell you a character, couldn't tell you a setting, a year, anything.
Yeah.
And then I get annoyed when people are like, oh my God, I read that book 10 years ago. What about the scene? Did it? And I'm like, how do you remember that?
I don't understand. Same with movies. I don't understand how people do that.
I don't remember a single movie.
And yeah, people talk to me about books and I'm just like, I definitely did read it. I don't know what you're talking about.
I have no clue what scene that is.
Yeah. Like when I was actually thinking about like, what are my two favorite books? I was like, dang, I should read She's Come Undone again because I remember that feeling. So yeah, it's totally like, yeah, I had to look at the characters and I was like, oh yeah, that's what happened. This woman named Dolores and she gains a lot of weight and that's like part of the plot point. Yeah, it was so good. And it's also so cool because a lot of times when I read a book where it's like a man wrote from a woman's perspective, I'm like, ugh, give me a freaking break. Mm-hmm. And you can sometimes like catch it. But this book, oh man, this guy, like he really captured the feeling of like being like a young girl and growing up and those experiences and what life can feel like as a girl in the world. I remember it just being like really powerful and beautiful.
Amazing. What's your other one?
My other one is Middlesex.
Oh, I Jeffrey hated that
Eugenides.
Book.
I don't have to say that. You did?
I did not. I was like, nothing's happening.
That's what I was gonna say. Do you think it's because this is another one where I'm like, I don't know what happened, but I remember it being, because it kind of meanders and it goes all over the place, right?
I don't know. I don't really remember it. I just know I didn't like it.
Yeah, I remember liking it because I felt like it was like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
I keep going away from the mic. But it was like, what the hell is happening? We're over here talking about Greece in like 425 BC. Uh-huh. I don't know why.
What?
And now we're over here talking about this guy in the 70s. I mean, that's literally like, if that happened, then I'm just lucky that I said that. But I don't know if that actually happened. But that's what it felt like, though. It was talking about like everything.
Yeah.
And all these like family ties and genes. Yeah. But I don't know. I loved that because then it all came together to like fit into this one character. I remember really loving it.
You're not alone. I think I'm the person. I'm the outlier. Most people love it. And I was like, nothing's happened.
Yeah.
What about a book you hate?
Okay. This is not a book I read, but it's a book I hate because people keep suggesting for me to read it. And I'm like, shut up. Okay. Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man by Steve Harvey.
Two things.
What?
First thing is I own it. Second thing is I've read it. Do not read that book.
Really?
Do not read that book.
Oh my God, bless you for saying
that. It's garbage. It's so bad. It's so dumb. It's sexist. It's garbage. It's trash. Yeah. No.
I like looked up quotes from it because I was like, I know I'm going to hate it. I haven't even read it.
It's so hateable. It's Steve Harvey giving women advice on relationships.
And that's the
like,
thing.
Like, get the fuck out of here, Steve Harvey. Truly.
And that's the thing is like,
get a suit that fits.
How you going to talk to us when you dress like that, like, Steve Harvey?
You look ridiculous. You're in a zoot suit.
Yeah.
In 2019.
You're an idiot. And he looks like an egg. Like, it's just like, just too much. Yeah, that was my thing with it. Is like it's another thing of the you want to. It's not necessarily a man writing from a woman's perspective, but it's like literally a man telling women how to live and how to date. And there's like quotes like, "Men can cheat because there are so many women willing to give themselves to a man who doesn't belong to them." No. It's like, listen, dude, like. Rude, first of all, rude. Like, right. The things he says are just, like, very...
It's so sexist.
And, yeah, I feel like I'm trying to think of people who recommended it to me without burning them, but it's just like, why would you think that I would like that? Like, I personally am like way more about going to therapy and learning about yourself and like your dating habits and changing your personality, not changing, but just like working on things that you can work on.
Right.
Rather than having a man in a zoot suit tell me how to live my life.
Well, it's also just so antiquated, and it's like the same thing as when colleges or whatever, you know, or people tell women, don't wear a short dress if you don't want to get raped. It's like, well, maybe you should tell your son to keep his hands to his fucking self.
Right.
Like, I can wear whatever I want to wear. If you think that that's an invitation to rape me, you actually have a whole other issue.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, and it's like the same thing with Steve Harvey. Permission. It's like women allow men to cheat, or men can cheat because women allow them. It's like, well, maybe you should be with someone that you want to be with and not cheat on her.
Right.
Like, why is that my responsibility?
It's definitely, yeah, you know, it's the responsibility does not necessarily always fall on the woman. It's ridiculous.
Well, right. Like, if you know you're cheating because you can, maybe you should take a look at your partner and say, maybe I should do the adult thing, which is break it off with you because I actually don't like you that much and you're not providing the things that I need.
I follow Cardi B. I don't know why, but like so intensely on Instagram because I just think
but
it's
she
like
deleted
wild.
Her Instagram.
She brought it back.
She did.
Okay. She back. She humping furniture and everything. Okay. I don't know what's going on with her. But it's just so fascinating to me because it's like Offset cheated on her, right? Like I've heard things like from people that have like seen him on set and like he has condoms in his writer. I probably should not say this, but it's like he just seems like a dirtbag, right? He's a dirtbag. But of course, on you know, comments left and right, Cardi obviously doesn't give him what he needs. She doesn't do this for him, she doesn't do that for him. And it's like that's that like antiquated point of view, blaming a woman for a man being a child and not like being able to get himself together. It's like I'm just so sick of that. And also it's like act like a lady, think like a man. Just even the title of it.
It's all horrible. You're allowed to hate that book. I don't fuck with that book either. Don't read the book. It's garbage.
Yeah.
All right. What's like a really great book that you've read?
I really liked The Woman in the Window by A.J. Finn.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that A.J. Finn has another name, a real life name. It's like Dan Mallory or something. And he is like a scammer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. No.
We'll link to it in the show notes. There's like an article about him like lying about having cancer and like his mom dying and all sorts of shit. And he's like, I didn't read the article, but I saw it floating around on the internet. So I'm going to link to it. I'll also send it to you.
Yeah.
I don't think that necessarily means that the book isn't good or enjoyable.
Right.
Because I loved A Million Little Pieces.
I loved it too.
And like, okay, so it's not true. Maybe just say that you wrote a piece of fiction.
I know. I guess
Or like hashtag based on a true story.
Yeah. Like, or like, fun idea that maybe could have happened. You know, like, I don't get why he didn't say it was fiction. Is it because it's like so much juicier if it's real life?
I think so. I mean, it's like that dentist scene.
Yes.
I do remember that.
That's what I feel like. That's the only scene that I remember too. Yes, it was so intense.
But I think I think part of the reason we remember it is because that was one of the scenes that was specifically called out about not being true.
Absolutely not true. Yeah.
So I think that's part of like why it sticks in my memory.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it's more compelling if it's true.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was still really good. And if you had told me that it was like, you know, I wrote a book inspired by some real life events.
Yeah.
I would still probably have loved it.
Because he did have problems, right? He did have some sort of problems.
Yeah, he went to rehab.
So it's like, that's good. Like he could just tell us he went to rehab and it inspired the story.
Right. Like every movie.
And also... right. And like A.J. Finn, like if he is a pathological liar... shouldn't that benefit his writing? Maybe he should just write that stuff instead of just saying it to everybody. That's wild.
Well, I think he was using it to like get publicity.
Oh.
Like saying like, oh, I have cancer. So people would be like, wow, this man with cancer wrote this great book.
Awful.
Like some fucked up shit. However, what I just said is from not reading the article. So just
read the article.
Yeah, I don't.
We're playing A.J. Finn right now by just saying things.
Literally, I'm like the person on Twitter who's like, this is bullshit. And then they're like, Read
the article
because it's actually the opposite of what you think.
Right.
So I'm doing that right now and sorry, but I'm glad that you liked the book.
I really liked it. I thought it was really good. And also it was, but it's also like kind of funny because it's the same plot, I think, to like Rear Window, like the Alfred Hitchcock movie.
Oh.
So that was really interesting too, because it's like, this is the same thing. I mean, but I just thought it was really good. Like, I just, I don't know, I loved it. So
what about, what are you reading right now?
I'm looking forward to reading How to Date Men When You Hate Men by Blythe Roverson. Okay. I think is how you say your last name.
So you're into those like dating how-tos kind of? No, you're not.
I'm normally not into dating how-tos. I'm normally not into just general, like, this is how you should live your life or, like, think about things, because I'm just like, I'll think about things how I want to. And like I said, therapy is better to me than, like, getting told how to live.
Right.
But I just, that title, it just got me so much, because I was just like, because I think about that all the time. I am single. I am not a great dater. I've had horrible experiences with men that have made me over it, you know?
Right.
And so I literally think, like, how am I going to keep doing this when, like, I hate these people? No, I don't hate them. I don't hate them. I love men, actually. I just, I can't seem to, like, find the right one that's not going to be a jerk. And so it's just like, so I think this book seems like it'll be really funny. And it's like, it's just like a kind of funny, silly book. And she also talks about, or she also interviews men to like ask them, like, was this a date? Was this not a date? Like, are we flirting? Are we not flirting? Ooh. And like, it just seems like a fun, like, way to like delve into that world of like, cause you don't want to be cynical. Like, I always say that. Like, I always want to say, like, I don't want to be that person that's just like, I hate men.
Right.
I'm always going to be single, because that's a sad way to think. Like, I love men. I think they're great. They're nice. They're good. But it's like, so I'm trying to keep it light, keep it fun while reading a book that's titled just like spoke to me so much. Yeah.
It's also a hard time to be into men right now in the culture.
Yeah.
Like, it's like men are, they're making things hard.
They're making things really hard. And I think there's
and they're like, behaving badly.
There's so many layers. Yeah. There's so many layers of it, because I think that like, I think obviously like, and then also they're making light of the things that kind of come out and you're like, why won't you just have a little like empathy or like take this more seriously and understand?
Well, it's like an entitlement too. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have to be responsible for other men's bad behavior. Yeah. Like, that's not me. And I am entitled to individuality. Mm-hmm. It's something that I've talked a lot about, I don't know on this show, but in life, especially when it comes to race, there's this conversation about individuality that is granted to the norm of culture. So in our culture, it's heterosexual, cisgender, white men.
Yes.
And that it's like, if you refer to someone like, oh, he's a white guy, it's like, oh, why do I have to be white?
Right.
But if you were to say that about like an Asian dude or a black dude, that's like how they're described, because everyone else is othered and they're part of a group. But for white men, it's like, oh, I'm an individual.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the problem of a lot of these conversations about gender and the shitty things that white dudes are doing right now and dudes in general are, it's hard to talk about because they get so defensive, because they think of themselves as being an individual and exceptional and entitled to their own shit. Mm-hmm. Where it's like for women, it's like, oh, it's all women. It's all black women. It's all Korean women. It's, you know, so it's like there's this divide in how we see ourselves and our roles in our communities, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think that there's like this like thing about labeling. Like if you say, like I always say, I wish, I mean, I don't know, this might sound stupid and maybe I'll get in trouble for this, but it's like, I always wish that we could find another word for racist, because when you say the word racist, people lose their damn minds.
Yeah.
And it's like, listen, like there's no other way to say it, but it's like, you have to just accept it that some people are this way, you know?
Right.
Or like any kind of labeling that's like, you know, privilege, you have privilege. Oh, bro, I didn't have privilege.
Right.
I, you know, I got grounded when I was 14. And it's like, honey, but your life and your whole experience, every single thing about your life has been different because you are a white man.
Right.
Or, you know, it's just, it's so frustrating, because there's, I feel like it's like, also we live in a time where like so many things are happening to so many different types of people, trans people, gay people, women, you know, minorities, immigrants. And it's like, and every person can kind of step back and be like, well, that's not me. That's not my problem. So I don't have to worry about it, because I'm nice to those people. And it's like, I think we should all be tuned into all of the problems and we should not be ignoring them until it gets to our front door.
Totally. Well, so there's an article, there's an author named Robin DiAngelo, and she wrote a book called White Fragility. Mm-hmm. And she just wrote an article, I think maybe in The Atlantic, I'll link to it, but it's about racism and niceness and this idea that if you're nice to people of color as a white person, that you couldn't possibly be racist. So that there's this this thing that white people do where like they make an extra effort to like smile at a black person walking down the street.
Right.
And like for a black person, I'm like, why is that woman smile? Like that woman's tripping. Like, I'm like, what's going on?
Trying way too hard.
They're trying to show like, I'm a safe person. I'm not racist because like being a racist is akin to murder essentially.
Right.
Like it's like, oh, you know, I'm calling you racist because you said a racist thing. I actually don't necessarily think that that's a value judgment on you.
Right.
There are people who are racist that I do think it's a value judgment. But then there's also people who just say racist shit because they don't know.
They don't know. And so it's like you have to be able to just take ownership of that and not be so like affronted or insulted that somebody said something to you, because people are just trying to educate you. At least in my experience from how I am, I'm not saying everybody's like that. Some people can be a little harsh for, and I don't think that's right. But I think that like, if I tell you like, oh, you shouldn't say that, you know, then it's like, just listen, don't act like I'm, you know, attacking your character. Cause I'm not.
Right. You just said a dumb thing and I'm trying to help.
Yeah.
Cause also I could just let you be a fucking racist and have you say that to the wrong person and see what happens.
Right.
Cause
you want to try
that in a job interview, see what happens.
Go for it. See what happens.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I do, it is a tough time to like date because of that, because of, I just think, I also think I have so many, I love the internet. I love my phone, but I just think there's so many things that have happened. Like I've gone from the time where people just met each other and dated to like online being like, oh, some people do online, but I don't want to do online to like being like almost all the ways to meet men are online.
Yeah.
Especially because I don't drink. I'm not going out to clubs, which I'm glad for because I'm tired. I don't want to meet men when I'm like wasted and like, whatever, you'll do.
Right.
But it's like, because of that, there's so many options.
Right.
People can have separate lives. They can have four lives. I have four girlfriends. I was actually just on the internet with my friend where we found that this guy had like a secret family and he was trying to hit on my friend and like date her. And I was like, bro, I was like, girl, he has like a child and he just celebrated his 4-year anniversary. So, but it's just like people don't. They don't connect in the same way. And so it's very hard. Dating's very hard.
Yeah.
And so it's just good to, I love any kind of relationship focus. I like talking about relationships. I like thinking about them, analyzing them. And so I think that this like book will be like exciting to read.
Okay. You have to tell us how it is. You have to report back.
I will.
I was just going to ask you how you pick your next book.
Oh, it's like a lot of times like with like the how to date men when you hate men. I literally just like I see it a lot on Twitter or like somebody will be talking about a book they read because I feel like it's the same way with like movies and just general things. Like I don't necessarily know what's going on because I don't have like a TV or like I don't have like cable. So I don't like see commercials hear, you know, advertisements or anything like that. And so I like to typically like listen to what people are recommending and like what they're like, oh my God, this book is so good. And so then I'm like, oh, I'll download it on my Kindle. On my little Kindle. And so that's how I do it. And then I realized also as I was like going through and thinking about books that I love, like Oprah's book club is legit.
She's legit.
I like every book I've read, like it's on that list.
She's really good.
Yeah.
She's got good stuff. Some of her stuff, I'm like, this is boring, but mostly it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
What's a book that you like to recommend to people?
Oh, I like to recommend the book, which I haven't even read the whole thing, which is silly, but it's like, you know, I will eventually. The book You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero.
I've read that.
Yeah. You're not so into it?
Dang. Not so into it. I'm a firm believer that books should be read at certain points in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read the wrong book at the wrong time, it won't connect with you.
Yeah.
And I read that book kind of when this show was like kind of already starting to like, I was starting to figure out what it was. And I think if I had read it 3 months before when I was getting ready to launch it, I would have really appreciated it. But I didn't really need the cheerleading because I was so excited about what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I wasn't feeling like, you need to get up and get out and like, you've got this, girl.
Like, all right.
I was I was already feeling that.
Yeah. You're
so like,
I know I got this.
I think that like if I'm in a funk in the future or something, I would revisit it and probably like it.
Well, I think that's why I recommend it.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not a book recommender typically, but it's like I think when people are feeling like they're going through like a low point or having or struggling, that's what I would recommend to people.
Yeah.
But I mean, I totally get that because sometimes you're just like, listen, I know what I'm doing. I
feel good today. Like, I
feel good.
Or like vice versa, like when you're feeling really crappy and you want to read something that's like sad.
Yeah.
And then you read like a joyful book. You're like, this book is garbage. Like, I just want to be crying in a corner.
Yeah, you got to be in the right place. Yeah, I started reading You Are a Badass when I was not feeling like a badass. And I was just like, I think I need like some someone to guide me because I'm lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, acting is a freaking disaster job.
It's a hard thing.
Yeah.
How do you organize your books?
First of all, I feel I've gotten rid of a lot of my books because as I've moved, I kind of realized that recently. I realized that today when I was looking through my books, I was like, oh, I guess I like don't have a lot of the books I used to have. So there's no organization to my system. They're it's just on shelves. Uh-huh. Looking cool, making me feel smart. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about some books that have had impact on you. So what's the last book that made you laugh?
When You Are Engulfed in Flames by David Sedaris. I just was like, it was a long time ago that I read this book, but I don't remember any other book like really making me laugh. And I would be like on the bus, like straight up just like cackling. Laughing out loud, cackling. I just think he's hilarious.
That's so funny. I've never read any of his stuff.
Yeah. I feel like I always felt like it wasn't my style for some reason. Just like sometimes it's like I'm like a fool. Like I'll pick like wine based off of like how the label looks. I'm like, that's not my style because that bottle is ugly.
Yeah.
And like his books just like didn't appeal to me based off of like literally I was judging a book by the cover. Right. But I just loved it. I thought it was hilarious. And he came to Steppenwolf actually when I was working there and read from a selection. And I was just like, this dude is hilarious. Like he's so funny.
That's awesome. What about the last book to make you cry?
Oh, man. When Breath Becomes Air.
Ugh.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What's
brutal.
It? Paul Kalanithi. Yeah, that book was brutal.
Brutal.
It's just like, I mean, you know, should I describe it or like just say it?
He's got cancer.
He's got cancer. He's a doctor.
He's a doctor. And not to spoil it, but he's dead.
Yeah, like we're just going to tell you he did.
I feel like that's part of the marketing of the book.
No, it's definitely
the
marketing of the book.
But what about the last book to make you angry?
Oh, The Great Alone by Kristen Hanna. Did you read that?
I didn't read it. What made you angry?
It didn't make me. It made me angry. The characters made me angry.
Okay.
Like, I was like, you dumb bitch. Why are you doing that again? It wasn't that. But it was like, it's a book about it's like a family moves to Alaska and the dad is abusive and he's like suffering from PTSD from being in Vietnam. Mm. And it was just like, because it's like a mom, a dad, and a kid. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have like, I don't know, but it's like, I was like, I connect to that kind of that story. And so I was just like frustrated because it's like, you see the mom repeatedly making mistakes and like going back and like the situation just getting worse and worse and worse. And it's just like, it's just frustrating. But that was a really good book. I actually really liked that
one. I've heard it's really good. It's memoir, really right? Or is it fiction?
I think it's fiction. I can't remember, actually.
I don't know either. I thought it was memoir, but who knows?
Yeah, it was
I'm
really
sure
good.
Whoever's listening right now is screaming, like, in their car, it's a fiction! We're sorry. We don't know. Actually, we don't seem to care that much.
No, I'm good.
What about a favorite book from childhood or from growing up?
Oh, I used to love those, like, R.L. Stein, you know.
Goosebumps.
I loved Fear Street. Did you ever read Fear Street?
No, I hate everything scary.
Oh my God. I don't know what is my deal, but
which
I'm just
like
obsessed
with that stuff. Which is why I also hate you for making me read I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Oh my God. I don't know what my deal is, but I just think like thrillers, murder stuff, like I don't know why. It's just so my thing.
I like murder. I like true crime. I don't like scary. So like I love a book about Charles Manson murders because I know what's coming. I don't need to be like following along as this weird thing's happening. I don't like that.
Oh yeah, that's how Fear Street definitely. But Fear Street was so funny because it always like turned, like you always knew what it was. There's always a twist at the end. You're like, okay, and I return the page and it's gonna have the twist on the, you
right
know.
Oh yeah. Okay,
they
so
were
it's
great
like
though,
very formulaic.
Yes,
it was kids books, so that
they
makes sense.
Good. Yeah.
Do you have any book that you love or that you remember reading and being like, wow, I'm reflected in this book. Like, I see myself here.
Well, this was interesting because this is like the same answer for like reflected back or like not really, also not necessarily represented. Okay. And I kind of want to find more books in this vein. I read this book called Black, White, and Jewish by Rebecca Walker because I'm Black, White, and Jewish.
So am I.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am.
That's so cool.
I've never read it though, but I've heard of the book. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's really cool to me because it's like you really don't meet people that are
There's
Black,
not
White,
there
and
many
Jewish.
Of
I have another friend actually that is, so we can hang out.
My brother is.
I know. My sisters are. So. So I read this book. I read that book and it was at a time because like when I first moved to Chicago, Chicago's a really weird town. Like,
okay.
It's a very segregated city. It's a great city, loved it, but it's very segregated and you become othered there. where I didn't feel that when I grew up in Kansas, and I didn't feel that in the suburbs in Kansas. But when I moved to Chicago, I was all of a sudden like black. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm black. I'm not just Nicole. I'm black. Okay. Right. Okay. So I read this book and I wanted to see kind of like what the experience was from her perspective. And I don't know. I think the reason why I feel like I saw myself represented in it, but I didn't, was because it was like she came from like a lot of money. Her mom's Alice Walker. And like, I don't know. I felt like she kind of has more like rich people problems. And after a while, you're like, I don't feel sorry for your
Got
rich
it.
People problems. And so after a while, I was just like, eh. And then at the end, it felt like she kind of like chose a side.
Okay.
And she like, I'm a, you know, black woman. This is also just like mostly from memory. So I don't want to like say this is exactly the book. But I just remember feeling like, oh, like, I don't like that. I want to kind of like still be able to embrace all
like
of you.
Being more mixed.
Yeah. I think that, I think, I don't know. I personally think it's really cool to be biracial and Jewish and all the weirdness that goes along with it. I think it's cool.
I'm into it.
And so it's like, I don't want to dismiss that. And I felt like it was kind of dismissive of that. And also just like coming from a place of privilege that was like, I couldn't really relate to.
That's interesting that your represented and your not represented book are the same.
Yeah.
That's super interesting. Do you have, as an actor, actress, I don't know. I say actor for everybody.
Me too.
Okay, great. As an actor, do you have a favorite adaptation of a book to film or TV, or something where you saw it and you were like, this is actually better than the book?
I think like to be honest, like The Hunger Games, like was a really good adaptation.
I love Hunger Games.
It was really
good. I have a Mockingjay pin.
Okay. We love in The Hunger Games. Yeah. I don't know. I just like, I read the books. I also like when I was starting to read them, I was like, I cannot believe I'm reading The Hunger Games. Like I am a grown ass adult. What am I doing? And then I was like, these books are so good.
I read all of them. I read the first two in like 3 days. And then when the third one came out, I read it in like 50 seconds.
Yeah. You can just like knock them out. They're delicious. So easy. They're delicious. So you just eat them up. And then you're like, I was living in New York at the time for like a short stint. And I was just like on the train, just like plowing through it.
So
and I thought the adaptation was good because I was like, this is one of those books where it could be real bad. Like, because I feel like you imagine so much of it. But I don't know. I felt like it looked
They did a
great.
Good job. The two guys, PETA and the other boyfriend, whatever his name is, were garbage.
Agreed.
So, both so bad. I was like, I need to be attracted to the hot one and I need to not I don't know. I need to like hate PETA because that's my feeling when I read it.
Yeah.
And I like kind of felt bad for PETA in the movie. And I also thought that the hot one like wasn't hot enough or like, I don't know. He was like a little like too wishy-washy. I needed like more like,
well, I think honestly, I don't know what it is about those like teen books, but they make boys seem so hot. Like I just was like, dang to these boys.
What's his name? What's the other one? PETA? Gail.
Gail? Wait, wasn't Gail the one that was like, PETA was the one that was like her
with
partner.
Her partner. But Gail was her hot bae at home.
Why was his name Gail?
I don't know.
That's so odd.
Truly, I should have known he wasn't going to live up to my expectations. But Gail was like supposed to be bae who was like at home watching over like the sister, whatever, Primrose or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like he was, I mean, he's handsome. It's like one of those Hemsworth people.
Yes.
But he wasn't like delivering.
I kind of liked him, but I'll tell you, the other guy, PETA, was like, are you freaking kidding
me?
I'm sorry.
Like a limp noodle.
Josh Hutcherson, I think, played him, and he is probably a lovely young man, but that was just not the role for him. I was just like, because that was definitely a disappointment.
Yeah, because it's like, I feel like that was the thing that was hard for me in the book and also in the movie is like, she's supposed to be torn between these two people, but PETA is just like the most boo.
He's like a dump.
He's the son of a baker. Give
me bringing you bread.
I love a carb.
Yeah.
Like if he came with a bouquet of baguettes, I would be all in. Anyways.
I thought that was a good adaptation though.
You're totally right. It was really good. Okay. Here's my last question for you. It's one that I steal from the New York Times. If you could require the president of the United States to read one book, what would it be?
I actually like looked books up for this because I was just like, first of all, I wanted it to be a children's book because this bitch needs it to be easy. It needs to have a lot of pictures. I I want to find a book that would teach empathy because I don't think he has any empathy whatsoever.
None.
And so I found this book called Hey Little Ant, and it was really cute. It's by Philip and Hannah Hoos. And it's like what would you do if the aunt you were about to step on looked up and started talking to you?
Do you know what's crazy? And I can't remember who, but I think someone else on this show recommended that book for this question. Yeah.
Really? For the president? Oh, that's so funny.
Either for the president or one of their favorite books from childhood, but I've heard it. It's like from the perspective of the aunt being like, don't kill me.
Yeah. It literally is like the person's like, oh, dang, an ant. I'm going to squish it. And then the next page is like his aunt with like two suitcases. And he's like, hey, that's not nice. Did you think about what you're doing? Think about my life. And I was like, well, it just seems like it's really cool because it's like Trump doesn't think about small people, like the real people or like, you know, the people he's hurting. He just goes for them and wants to squish them. Right. And it's like, what if you actually listened to them for a little bit?
Right.
Like, what about like found out about their lives?
Or what if you just like went around the ant?
Yeah.
Like you don't actually have to like separate children from their parents at the border. Like you don't have to do that. No. Like you could just like go around the ant.
It's just extra. But that's and that's why I feel like he's always inflicting like the extra pain or the extra stuff because he has like a hatred for the little guy. Mm-hmm. And it's so odd for the other. But that's what I always think about everybody. When people are like, I hate gay people. I shouldn't have done the Southern accent because that's not very nice. But when people are like, I don't like gay people, I'm like, why? Like, what do you care?
Right.
That's so odd to me. Like, I don't care that you have a husband. I'm not mad about it. Right. And like, so what do I care if this guy has a husband?
I was literally thinking about this in the shower yesterday, which is a weird place to think about things, but that's why I do a lot of thinking.
Yeah.
I was thinking about transgender, like all the transgender bans and bathroom bills and like just all the like nasty, yucky, mean stuff that's going around transgender people. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking like, isn't basically the question I have for people who quote unquote don't believe in transgender people or their rights is like, is that a person?
Yeah.
Like, do you recognize that as a human?
Right.
If so, like it's like one of those maps, yes or no.
Yes
and
or
if
no.
you click yes, then do you believe that humans should all have equal rights? Yes or no? Because that's really what it's coming down to.
Right.
It's like, I'm not asking you, do you want to be transgender? I'm not asking you what your opinion is on the existence of transgender people. I'm just asking you to recognize that that's a human, yes or no? And then do you feel that you as a human should have the same rights as other humans?
Right.
You know, and like, I think that when you start to simplify it like that, it really makes people who are anti-gay or trans or black or Jewish or whatever it is, like it makes them really hard. It's a hard pill to swallow when you really distill it down to you don't believe that these other people are human.
Right. Absolutely.
Or the idea of America that everyone like believes in is, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and equal protection under the law and all this stuff. And so you're saying that these people should have special laws for them. So you're saying that they're not human. They don't, you know, it's like, when I started to think about it that way, I was like, oh, that's actually really terrible, like in a deeper way than just I'm Christian and I don't believe in you.
Right.
Like, I don't need you to believe in me. I'm here.
Absolutely don't need to.
I'm fully here and alive.
Yeah.
Like as a trans person or whatever the thing is, as an immigrant, as a Muslim, as a person who would like to have an abortion.
Yeah.
As a woman who would like to take birth control. Like all of these things that people are just saying, I fundamentally have the right to exist and you think that I don't.
Yeah, like, that's absolutely what it is. It's that basic. It's just like, it makes no sense. And it seems like it would be impossible to justify. Like, so you're saying they're not people. And that's what you're really saying. That's your answer.
That's your answer.
And it's like, that's a crazy answer.
Right.
Because it's like, also, I always think too, you're gonna be like that till it comes to your front door. And then when it comes to your front door, it's going too late. It's the same, what's that poem that's like, when they came for the Jews, I didn't say anything. It's really wild to me. Like, I also just, like, think, like, people wouldn't – no one chooses to be what is considered the other. Like, no one would choose that. If you had a choice, like, if I had a choice, I mean, I wouldn't – I don't think I want to be a white man, to be honest.
No, I mean
– I would just want to be me. But it's like, if you have a choice to, like, live a very easy life, straight shoot, straight shot to just money and happiness and whatever, basic. Yeah, people are going to always choose that.
Right. And safety.
And safety. I mean, like, just walking down the street as a trans person can be dangerous. And it's like, how are you going to gun – like, go for these people?
Right.
It makes no sense to me. So, yeah, I just, like, I feel like we're losing empathy.
We need more empathy, the president and others. Okay, well, that was my last question for you. Okay. We've really ended on a equality for all, which is where I always want to end everything. Do you have any – well, before we do this, next week we're going to be talking about I'm Thinking of Ending Things by Ian Reid. It's a thriller. There will be spoilers next week.
I'm very excited to talk about it because I have no idea what I read. So please tune in. And Nicole, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, just thank you for having me. This was a lovely conversation.
Yay. Thank you for coming on. And we will see you guys in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Nicole Thurman for joining us. Next week, we're going to be talking about I'm Thinking of Ending Things by Ian Reid. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. You can check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, like perks and our virtual book club and more, go to patreon.com/thestacks. For one-time contributions, go to paypal.me/thestackspod. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas, and I will see you in the stacks.